Ojibwe Indians and Associated Dendrils Group.
We have a very special guest today to help us really delve into Native American history in celebration of a Native American Heritage Month. And we've had her on before, and we're welcoming you back. So please share with us your background and what you do, Adrian.
Anin, Mekazawi, Kwan, Dijana, Kaz, Mississauga, Ghanaian, Da'a, Chumana, Singh, and Noonjaba. My name is Adrian Benjamin, English, and I am from also the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, along with Don. And I am a full-time artist, activist, educator. I currently am working as a contractor, as a reconciliation advisor for Minnetonka Moccasins. On the side of that, I do my own cultural and, I guess, public art. And prior to all of those fun things, I spent a majority of my career building and bettering youth programs for my tribe, Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. And happy to be back. Glad to be asked.
Welcome back. Absolutely.
Sure.
So you're a busy person. Just with that introduction, you are a busy person. So we're going to delve into some of that as the conversation goes on. The theme of today is to really understand a really important aspect of celebrations, but also honoring traditions along the lines of jingle dress. And the significance of what a jingle dress is, the dance that comes along with it, and all the different elements that are attached to it. So let's begin with the history. It's my understanding that it dates back to the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe in terms of its origin, but help us understand how that came about and how that has evolved.
I always like to preface this, and I want to do it here. I do it everywhere when I do talk about this story and talk about the jingle dress, that this is Mille Lacs' story of the jingle dress that was told to us. One of our most famous, I'll say, even they say he's one of the most famous Anishinaabe that ever was at this time is Larry Smallwood. And he was a really famous powwow MC throughout the country. He told this story and talked about it and really put it in the forefront and kept it alive from elders that told him the same story. So I always like to talk about that first. And I also like to acknowledge that there are other origin stories that come from other tribes about this dress. And a lot of times I've seen people, you know, say, well, it's really came from here or it really came from there. And from my knowledge of historians and their records, like it really can't be traced to the original beginning. And so what I like to talk about is that I think it's quite lovely that we can think of this dress in the way that it came to our people through a dream, and that it possibly came at the same time to a few different places when it was needed to come to us. And so with that, I will enter into talking about that origin story of the dress. So the story that Mekazawi one told was started with an old man in our community here in Mille Lacs. He had a daughter that was very ill, was very sick. And he kept having this dream over and over about these four women wearing these dresses, and the way that they talked about it was with metal cones on them. And it made this beautiful sound like rain or like it's nothing he had really heard before or seen. And this dream had happened over time. And finally he thought, okay, maybe I should tell my wife about this dream. And in this dream, he dreamt of these four women wearing four different colors. They were red, yellow, green, and blue. And they were dancing in this specific way. And I know we're on radio, so I'm trying to be as descriptive as possible. So the way that it's described is that they danced forward, maybe almost in a shuffling motion, in an S straight with very straight steps, gracefully They didn't dance backwards. They didn't turn around. And when they danced, those jingles made that noise that the man remembered in his dream. So when he did tell his wife about this dream, she got together with some other women in the community, and they decided that if he had dreamt this that many times, that perhaps that these dresses should be made. And they didn't really have an answer other than that at the time as to why. They just decided to do it. And so some women got together and they created those four dresses in those four colors. And at that time, that the man's wife showed those women how to dance. Here in Mille Lacs, it's part of our culture. It's called the ceremonial drum, and it happens in the fall and in the spring. It's a place where we were gifted these drums by the Bwana people, which is our word for Dakota Lakota people. And they've been in our communities history writes about it, I guess, in terms. They decided to bring these four dresses out at one of our ceremonial drums here in Mille Lacs. And at that time, they brought along their daughter who was sick. And it said that she was laying down. She wasn't very well at all. So she couldn't, it was even hard for her to be at this event. And this man got up and talked about the dresses and talked about the dream that he had, why he and his wife thought that they should be made. And they had those women come in and show the people and dance in those dresses that he dreamt about at that time. And as that night went on, those women danced in the way that he had seen in his dream. And the story is said that as those women danced, that little girl started to perk up, and she started to even participate and got behind those ladies and started dancing with them. And that is our community story of how the jingle dress came to be known, at least as the healing dress, and where it came from was from that dream. From that point, the dress was gifted to other reservations in different directions in different areas. And we see what we see now across the country with powwows that have adapted and adopted the dress into their own circles and regalia. So when we think about the jingle dress here, one thing that Mille Lacs says is we're the home of the jingle dress, but we're also the home of the sidestep because of the type of song that goes along with this dress and the way that it was dreamt about happens here in our big drum ceremonies. So a little fun fact there.
This is Counter Stories. You're listening to a special rerun of our episode, Meaning of Art, The Jingle Dress. I'm Haley with co-hosts Anthony Galloway, Luz Maria Frias, and the late Donald Eubanks, with special guest Adrian Benjamin. This show is supported by Ampers and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For a full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.
I think it can be. I think in different, it's become so popular now in powwow circles and just across the country that sometimes people just wear it in contest powwow. And I don't know that there's too much teaching behind it, but to those that know the teachings and especially here in Mille Lacs, we understand what that means to wear that dress and, the origin behind it and the power behind it too. One thing that I can share that I've personally seen growing up, is there was a time at Mille Lacs Powwow and Don, perhaps you were there or no, remember this, but, there was an elder who actually had a heart attack at the annual powwow. And at that time, when the ambulance was there and that specific individual was being loaded up into the ambulance, even they called out all the jingle dress dancers to come and dance for that man. And I remember he survived that heart attack. And so for me, I was always like, it was just, it was like a moment because I'd always heard the story. And I guess when you're in the presence of it, and you understand it, like it has just a different power and feeling. And I mean, even just recently I was giving a presentation at Central Lakes College in Brainerd, and I mean, most of the folks that gave comment in the audience were talking about the way that it made them feel. And I think that that really speaks to the depth of it, whether you know the story or not. I think that people just, it just brings a different feeling for people. But that's one time I do remember, and I remember just being blown away, like, and sat, that was a long time ago, and that elder has passed away now, but I remember he did live quite a few, many years after that happened. And I always remember that and talk about that story when I'm asked about the jingle dress too.
This is Counter Stories. You're listening to a special rerun of our episode, Meaning of Art, the Jingle Dress. I'm Haley with co-hosts Anthony Galloway, Luz Maria Frias, and the late Donald Eubanks, with special guest Adrian Benjamin. This show is supported by AMPERS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For a full conversation, please visit counterstories.com. In the Hmong culture, we have something very similar to the jingle dress. It's our coin clothing. And it's so funny, like I was walking through Hmong village with an indigenous friend just the other week, and we were talking about it, and she looked at the Hmong clothing, she's like, so this is your jingle dress. And it's like, it's very similar, you know? And so I don't know the reason, the meaning behind the coins. There's like different theories out there for the coins. One is that they're, if you look at the very, very old clothing, it's their French coins, because the French were colonizing Laos at the time. And so they would pay Hmong farmers to farm and harvest stuff for them, and they would pay them these coins that were of no use to the Hmong farmers. So they started using them as decorations on their dress. Like that's one of the theories. But a lot of it used bandao, like the cross stitching. And so growing up, we as the girls had to do that. Like every summer was spent at my grandma's house doing bandao, right? And so is that something that you grew up with? Is that something that happens within your community, like within ours when we were younger, like, you know, having to make our own dresses?
I would say yes. And I think that maybe, I don't want to say that the value of making has like lessened, but I think that the understanding of the actual what goes into the making has maybe went away a little bit more, because nowadays, like you can buy pre-rolled cones. Mm-hmm. I buy pre-rolled cones. Some people, like, I feel like it's this artist thing where they're like, I roll my own, you know, they have this like,
for
Hmong people, like there's now machine made bandao. Like it just goes through the machine and it comes out perfect. There's no wrong stitch, like when we do it ourselves, right? And people will pay more for the handmade stuff because there are the imperfections.
The idea of value, right? And these coins and these things that just probably could have took them somewhere and had some kind of, you know, got something for the tin, but instead they're putting 300 or 400 onto a dress. Or, you know, if there's a kid, 200. People ask me about that too. Well, how many go on a dress? And I would just say, until it looks good, right? Like that, because there's a lot of stories out there too that were like, oh, well, we have one for each day of the year. And then I've heard, like, you know, other people go, well, we didn't even follow the Gregorian calendar. So where did that come from, you know, and stuff. So it gets interesting when you talk about it. But to me, that was the teachings that I was given, is like, you know, you're also mindful if like a dress is someone's like first one, like you don't want to have it be too heavy for them, or they're not used to that too. Cause I mean, it is an athletic activity to say the least, to dance, but it is something that I definitely grew up with. I think I made my first dress when I was like 13, and I had some friends that were a little more apt to it than me. And I remember I just took apart one of my grandpa's old shirts to try to figure out how to even put something together like that. And it's like, I tell this story because it's funny too. Because so I was the Mille Lacs princess, and maybe this is a context that might need a Don explanation further too. Not a forever title. It's like a once in a year, kind of an ambassador role. But I was a Mille Lacs princess when I was like 12, 13, and they had you take like professional photos, right? And I'm wearing this dress, and so it never goes away. I hate it. And I'm like, oh God, that's the first one. It was like, you know, like 90s all the way. Like it had a satin collar and whatever. Yeah, but that was modeled after one of my grandpa's old like button-up shirts that I found in his closet. And it's forever in the old D1 center. A picture of me wearing that dress is in there as Mille Lacs Princess Amaz. Good, humble reminder of the beginnings of my jingle dress making there.
Did you save it? Did you save? Do you still have that dress today?
I don't. I have moved so many times in my life that I don't. I wish I did. Maybe it exists somewhere out there. If I spot it someday at a Powell or at a museum or something, I'll know it for sure. Like, because it's white and blue satin. And yeah, I would never forget it ever.
You're listening to Counter Stories. I'm Luz Maria Frias with co-host Hilly Lee, Anthony Galloway, and Don Eubanks, and special guest Adrian Benjamin. This show is supported by AMPERS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com. You know, I think about the sentimental value of that all, right? And the memories that come with it, and certainly the sentimental value that it was your grandmother's tins, you know, and the care that she took to put it away for you, but also the loves that she must have been thinking about as she was putting this together, and knowing that you would then at some point in your life wear them with pride, you know, knowing that it came from your grandmother. I think about that as you tell this story. Now, we talk about quite a bit in throughout our segments about appropriation. So the question that I am asking you next goes to that. Can anyone wear a jingle dress? And when I say anyone, I'm thinking folks outside of the Native community. It's not lost on me that we just celebrated Halloween, and we take a lot of intentional steps here to make sure that folks don't begin to appropriate things that they shouldn't. So can you speak to that?
Well, first I'm going to ask Don to talk on that because he's the elder here. I always, when it comes to the rules, I'll give that one first to Don, but I'm happy to talk about what I was taught to.
I think that you should just go ahead and jump in because, you know, that one becomes interesting because I don't remember any particular stories about those kind of things. What I remember, Adrian, what I remember being taught is that we gifted things. And so it wouldn't surprise me if one of these was gifted to someone outside of our community. Now, appropriation in terms of how we mean that now, I think, however, is totally different. And because I personally have never seen anyone, although I think I've heard, like, there's that Running Man, Burning Man, Running Man, whatever, or and that's because I'm an elder, right? So where there might be people who imitate that kind of stuff, then I think it's inappropriate because they don't know the significance of what they're doing, right? But I think that if someone was gifted it, that they usually then are told the story behind it. And I think that then it has much more meaning.
My answer when someone asks if anyone can wear a jingle dress is no. I think that there's, I mean, and that's not even just from the Mille Lacs perspective, but I think I've listened to stories from the other communities that, you know, claim the home of it and their own origin stories about it. You know, it's a process for some folks that, you know, back in a long time ago, it was like regalia was something that was also dreamt about. And I've gotten asked that question before. They're like, you know, you make all of these things, you make these dresses and, you know, in old days, this. And I also look at it from a creator's eyes, And I don't mean like I'm getting Manadu over here by any means. Just an inside joke with Don, sorry. But I look at it like as a maker, let's go there. And like I think of these things, like if someone talks to me about a dress that they want to have, or if they're already a seasoned dancer and they have the, you know, they're, what if it's their tribe has a, you know, a rite of passage to wear those dresses, if it's dreaming, if it's that they did A, B, C, or D, or they were gifted one from their grandparents and said, hey, that you should wear this, then I'm only doing my part as someone who has those visionary skills as an artist to create and bring that to life. Like, that's how I look at it in terms, because people are like, well, if people aren't dreaming of this, they should make it themselves. But to me, that it's an art form of reclamation in itself as well, because not everybody was as lucky as I was to grow up with Omekagaboibun, right? Or to understand the teachings, or to come from this place that I come from to learn the deeper meaning of the dress, to have teachers that took me under their wing to teach me sewing and make me better at it. So when I think about it too, and someone comes to me and they're like moved by it, or I always wanted to be a jingle dress dancer, like who am I to take that opportunity away from them? Like, to me, I should give them that opportunity as a maker, right? And to go back to the appropriation question, I think that specifically why it's a hard no when it comes to a Mille Lacs perspective maybe on the dress is that because it is such a sacred thing that came from that dream, and that it's just like other regalia, I guess. I don't know that I see too many other people trying to do that. I think it's more of a question than actually something that is a want or has happened outside of Burning Man. But like, I have had someone ask me one time and I didn't know how to take it because it just felt weird, and I like to tell it because I think it gives a perspective on why it would feel that way. But I had someone ask, could you just make me a dress? I would never go out in public anywhere or go try to, you know, join in a powwow, but I might just dance at my home with it on. This is a non-native person that asked me that, and I was like, you know, I just, why?
Yeah,
like,
I trust that.
Thank you. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it just was not good. It wasn't the vibe. You know? So it's like, for what? Like, what's the purpose there?
You spark a really important question. Like, you create fashions, you know, with the beaded fedoras and the shirts and things like that, that are stuff that somebody would wear in public.
And right? Can wear.
And
yep.
And can wear, right? This from the moment you talked about it, sound like it was something for a function, for ceremony, for you know, a particular thing. And that notion of needing to have a piece of somebody, like those are some I think those are some of the deeper conversations that we aren't having, because we stay at the surface from what we can see, the food we can eat, the cultural things I can point to at the top of the iceberg. But down at the bottom, I think you're hitting on a mental model that is really important, right? This need for historically to have a tangible piece of something to put on your wall. I feel the same way when I walk into folks' households who ain't got no connection to Africa whatsoever. And you see all of these masks and statues and stuff like that. And the question becomes, why? What is the need to have a piece of a thing? And I think, you know, we have to be uncomfortable enough to ask, is that the piece of us that we have soaked up and learned in this society that says that anything that is non-white normative, I need to treat as an object that I can have a piece of? I run into the same thing when in drumming, the djembe, what the djembe represents. And I'll see people, you know, I walk into classrooms and see people with a djembe there, and they have like a cup on it, or they set a clipboard on it. And I'm like, yo, what the hell are you doing? Like disrespect, like there's that thing. And I think it's worth unpacking, because that is a marker of something that can go much deeper. I've, you know, where am I in a relationship with some, you open the door, so I'm gonna go there. Am I in a relationship mm-hmm. with somebody because I truly love them, or is this an extension of that piece of me having a piece of that culture? And I'm dating interracially because of the novelty rather than the meaning, or you know, the person. Like there are these things that get real tricky in that regard. So I appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, like I think that it goes super deep, because it opens questions for me too on just, like I said, there's a huge why there. And like what you said about your drum, this for me, I fail to find the words often, like in English, that in like common culture, right, that can even equate to the sacred understanding of that dress. And same for your drum, right? What makes it just, you know, there's been so, and I think this is another itchy point, is like there's been so many things taken and colonized, and like, you know, we want this and that and the other thing. And I think it's okay for cultures to say like, this is ours, this is something we do, and that it's part, okay that it's not for you.
We are so grateful for you and to you, Adrian, for your time, for sharing your knowledge, sharing your gifts with us today. You have your own website, you know, you are an artist. But in closing, I wanted to offer you an opportunity to say any closing remarks that you might have before we end the segment.
You know, I did spend a lot of time talking about the jingle dress and why that is sacred and something that maybe other people shouldn't wear, or isn't something to be appropriated, you know, do better as a buyer. I think the best thing is to do homework and to speak to artists, to buy directly from artists that are, you know, specifically from tribes. And you can always ask questions, you know, and be an educated consumer to know those things, you know, because there are beautiful things out there, the beadwork, the birch bark.
Well, thank you for those closing remarks. Really valuable and insightful, and for all of us to really take in and understand that. I'm Luz Maria Frias, living life, enjoying it to its fullest, and doing some work on the side with DEI executive coaching and some board work.
I'm Anthony Galloway, partner at the Dendros Group and pastor of St. Mark AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota.
I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers, and Counter Stories producer.
And I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians and associate at Dendros Group.
Amika Gabawikwe, Adrian Benjamin, Mille Lacs Band member, artist, reconciliation advisor, activist.
Thank you so much. Be good. This has been Counter Stories, a co-production of the Counter Stories crew and Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.
It is 2 minutes before 2, and you are listening to KFAI Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org, non-commercial community-powered radio. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Programming on KFAI is made possible in part through grants in the state of Minnesota and listeners like you. Stay tuned for Corazón Latino.
Todo el encanto de tu voz y tu mirada.